number 61. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the science fiction and fantasy podcast by Jake Jackson. This week's story is a continuation of last week, which was called Insurrection. We follow up with Human Nature, an exploration of our instincts and our capabilities to receive any form of government. So we are gathered to discuss the fate of the planet Koi Beta, Elector Solvik continues, to decide how we respond to the destruction of our institutions across the planet, the complete breakdown of our system of government in this sector. We must consider the nature of our own species and our effect on the people of the colonies who have until now appeared cooperative. I call upon the invited guest of the Assembly to discuss the nature of humankind before we move on to consider appropriate steps forward. Within the auditorium of 1,000 people, all human and representative of the 84 star systems of the Council, 10 of their number raised themselves and threaded down the long flights of stairs that wound through the rows of seats. Some wore their traditional gowns, others were garbed in simple clothes with ornate lapels, and two of them drifted without the apparent need to grace the floor with their feet. Each of the 10 bore themselves with great confidence, and gathered before the Council of Seven, inclined their heads, then turned to face the auditorium. The representative of the Barnard Star System, a veteran of the First Colonial Wars, began. According to the classic Taoist text, Tao Te Ching, when human nature is aligned with the rest of nature, order and harmony are the result. Human nature, in a natural state, is untouched by culture or ritual. The representative from Alpha Centauri continued. Arthur Schopenhauer, a Western philosopher from Old Earth, said, "For the thing in itself, the will to live exists whole and undivided in every being, even in the smallest, as completely as in the sum total of all things that ever were, or are, or will be." And so the discussion proceeded, back and forth between the 10 representatives. Is there a human nature, a difference between that of humankind and the rest of the natural world? Some don't see such a difference between all living organisms. Is it just a concept for planet Earth, or can it be extended to all habitable planets in the universe? If humans are an intrinsic part of the ecosystem on the planet of origin, our arrival on another planet, where the flora and fauna are different, where indigenous species of sentient creatures already exist, then surely the individual nature of humankind does matter. We can talk of similarities, that all living things strive to survive, that the survival instinct overrides all other instincts when threat or hunger presents itself. We can also talk of mutual self-interest in an organic system where groups of individual members of the same species, when gathered together, tend to survive more effectively. This manifests as a strategic empathy built into the survival instincts of all living things. In some communities, this presents itself as kindness and courtesy, but it does have a species-level function. Underlying this similarity in all things to survive is a fundamental desire for growth, the will to live, for plants to reach upwards into the light, for small animals to grow larger, humans to find a better place to shelter or a lake with more water, that's to say, the urge to strive. But the key differentiator of human nature in particular, but seen in other conscious species in the galaxy to varying degrees, is the ability to control the environment in which it lives. Our consciousness, our perception of our free will, combined with the practical ability of our hands, and the conceptual ability of our brains allows us to see the possibilities and make them happen. In human history, this has caused two equal and opposite tendencies: the desire to cooperate to create greater benefits for a community for the species, but also to allow an individual to acquire advantage in the form of assets, land, and to desire more, to wish to expand influence and power. In some individuals, this desire is strong, while in others, the desire to cooperate holds sway. This creates a tension within the species and at the local level in groups and communities. It leads to another element of human nature, the willingness to cause conflict to increase gain. These two strands in human nature, the ability to cooperate and the desire to gain, exist in a parallel state of permanent conflict because solutions to create just societies for one stand in opposition to the needs of the other. Systems created for the cooperative instincts repress the freedoms of the strivers, while systems which allow the strivers to prevail create a division between those who have and those who do not, depressing the freedoms associated with economic status and ultimately health. Self-interest is pitted against the group interest of the species as a whole. Of the societies on old Earth who survived cooperatively both with their own kind and with the natural world and the land itself, the Polynesian people of the Pacific Islands were a prime example, where every element of their world was interdependent. They were part of a shared biography of myth-making, land-creating and sharing, a society that was bound into itself without conflict on a grand scale. In other societies on old Earth, kinship communities, which worked together and supported each other, operated in a similar way, with threats only appearing from outside their mutual state of being. These societies emphasized the cooperative need for survival over the self-independent imperative, but more widespread is the human instinct to strive. As early civilizations gathered around rivers, parceled land, and began to farm, the people of Sumer, Asia, and Mesoamerica developed languages to describe the land and to trade. They coalesced into larger groups, into cities, and improved their methods of acquisition and technology. And they developed systems of governing based around the need to describe and to strive. Personal independence and self-interest came naturally to humankind, and they grew their lists of possessions and peoples into lands, empires, and colonies. Their great leaders battled each other for supremacy, as the human nature to strive brought the need for a hierarchy in the world that reflected the supreme authority of their gods. Indeed, in the Middle Kingdom of Egypt, and later the emperors of Assyria, the kings adopted the mantle of the gods, assuming divine inspiration. They talked of themselves as deities. Worship of the gods and ritual was, for many civilizations, a way of explaining the world and attempting to control it, to both ameliorate and encourage the excesses of humankind. Sacrifice and barbarism was institutionalized into ritual as a way of enforcing hierarchy, to control the wayward population through fear and brutality. Humanity's natural instinct for survival can respond to the excesses of the strivers with excesses of its own. The ancient historian Thucydides wrote about the time of the early experiments in democracy, in the Athenian city-state at war with the Spartans, who worshipped the power of the hierarchy and exercised their right to might. It was a time of revolution with many parts of the ancient Hellenistic world roiling with internal strife and savage slaughter meted out from within. Of the civil war at Corcyra, Thucydides wrote, "The sufferings which revolution entailed upon the cities were many and terrible, such as have occurred and always will occur as long as the nature of mankind remains the same." The viciousness of humanity, seen now in the potential of both core elements of human nature, to survive and to strive, brings us towards the discussion about how to curb the latent savagery in our species, so that the kind can live amongst the self-interested, the good amongst the evil. In the century of great revolutions in the Western nations of old Earth, as nations yearned to shed the yoke of the oligarchy, the hierarchy of kingship, as divined by the gods, that caused the division and suffering of so many within each nation, the rationalists of the Enlightenment began to navigate their own way through the needs of humanity, the many and the few, to construct the methods of government that would cater for the fundamentals of human nature, to cater for the will of the majority, and respect the minority. James Madison, a founding father of the American Republic in the era of Enlightenment, wrote in the Federalist Papers, "It may be a reflection on human nature that such devices should be necessary to control the abuses of government. But what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary." The auditorium rippled with appreciation and some relief, as Elector Solfaing stood up for a final remark before the break. "So we have come a long way from the lofty ideals of the Tao Te Ching, revealing a darkness at the heart of humanity that cannot be ignored in the circumstance of the Khoi Beta insurrection. If we are to address the terrible consequences of Schopenhauer's will to live that strives within us all, we must ask whether the nature of humankind is capable of being tamed, either by cooperation, seduced by kindness, or ruled by a determined hierarchy. Is it even possible to introduce a form of government to Khoi Beta planet, now a burning wreck? If human nature is the cause and the problem, then what is the answer?" Next week sees the conclusion of this three-part series on human nature, insurrection, and government. That's it for now. This is Jake Jackson. I'll see you next time. Thank you and goodbye.